From WXXI News, this is Unleash the Pet Show on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. And this is our monthly show about our animals, our pets, and some of the people who own them. And it's also a great opportunity for you to talk directly to a veterinarian. And this month, we've got Dr. Mark Pessin from Fairview Veterinary Hospital. You can call the program and ask a question about your pet by calling us at 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255. Or if you're right here in Rochester, you can call 263-WXXI, 263-9994. If you're on Twitter, you can tweet your question to the hashtag Unleashed, or you can find me at Evan Dawson on Twitter. I want to welcome our guest, Dr. Mark Pessin from Fairview Veterinary Hospital. Welcome. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me here.
I was just asking you what's keeping you busy, and sort of an abnormal winter so far, and that is not hasn't been as cold as normal, not as much snow, and so you're still... I was surprised here you're still seeing allergies at times.
Still seeing skin cases, ears, things like that, stuff that we usually don't see so much in the winter. But it's been warm, so it's not that surprising.
Cold weather, is that typically something that kind of shuts down allergies, at least for a little while for animals?
Most allergies, yeah. Seasonal, that type of allergies, definitely.
All right. Well, listeners, again, this is your chance to weigh in. And we've already heard a number of your questions, which I will get to in the written form. But if you want to call the program, you can do that. And I want to start with sort of a seasonal question, but first of all, I've got a cat that loves to eat snow. No big deal there, right? We track snow in.
No big deal.
No big deal. Unless
you do have to worry about salt and antifreeze and those type of things, road wash.
See, this is where I was going with that, because I track snow in and she loves to eat it. She's not the brightest bulb in the box, but she's very sweet. It hasn't seemed to get sick off that. We haven't had to use very much in the way of snow clearing products, etc. To my knowledge, I don't even think we've got antifreeze hanging around, but sometimes we'll salt the front walk. So let's start there. Salt, potential problem, yes or no?
Definite problem, yes.
And what can that do?
Ingesting it can make them sick, you know, cause vomiting, diarrhea. They usually don't, you know, it's not a fatal disease. But more importantly, especially when you're taking dogs out for walks, you know, if it's not There is pet safe salt that is sold, and if it's not that product, it can cause the pads on the feet to crack. You can get bleeding on the pads of the feet. It can be very painful, more so for dogs than cats. Cats usually aren't walking on the pavement, things like that.
Just like our shoes and our clothing can get sort of cracked and wrecked by salt over time.
Right. And, you know, a lot of times with shoes, you see that salt stain, that white line on there. Well, that can be on the pads of feet on your pets as well. And that can be very painful.
Now, when it comes to antifreeze, I mean, that's obviously a non-starter. But these various, I say non-starter, that's a very dangerous product, right?
Absolutely.
Doesn't take much to actually kill?
Doesn't take much. It's a very, very, very lethal product.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to dwell on this, but over the course of your career, how long have you been at Fairview?
I've been at Fairview since, when I get there, 1990, so 16 years. And I've been with the Monroe.
Oh, 1990, that's 26 years.
26. No. I was there in 2000, 16 years, but I've been with the Monroe Veterinary Association since 1990.
Okay, so 26 years as a local vet here, and how many times have you seen antifreeze cases?
Fortunately, not that many. We see the emergency services end up probably dealing more with those type of situations, but we have seen a few, and it's 50-50 whether your pet's going to make it or not.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
And it is, from what I've read, it's kind of, I don't know if it's sweet or fragrant.
Correct. Usually it's more of a dog problem. Believe it or not, cats are too smart to actually drink the antifreeze.
Oh, no, I believe it.
Yeah. Dogs, though, will lap it right up. And it's very dangerous.
Are you taking a position on which animal species this is?
No, I have three dogs and a cat. So. And if they're listening, I don't want the cat to get mad.
You can start war with the audience.
Right? Absolutely.
Even though objectively we know the answer is cats. Now, so if you want to call and dispute that, it's 844-295-TALK. And we'll be glad to take your calls. Next month's all about cats, by the way. And there was a recent quote-unquote study that said if your cat was large enough, it would probably try to kill you. I don't believe that.
Probably not.
No.
But a quick little aside, I have two chihuahuas and I have a bull mastiff. And people always ask me who's in charge. And I tell them the cat's in charge. So
three dogs and a cat.
And the cat runs the show.
The cat runs the show. Yeah. Interesting. Now, for animals that may, or dogs, usually dogs, as Dr. Pessin is saying, that may be attracted to antifreeze, when it comes to salt, I assume And it is salt, and they may want to lick it, just be sort of on guard for that.
Correct, correct. It's much more of a problem with you know, getting on the pads and getting on the legs, and that's why you should always wipe your pets down when you bring them in from outside. Wipe their pads down. You can also get ice that forms, you know, in the hair in the foot pads. Try to get those little balls of ice out if you can as well. But the main thing is when you bring them in, just wipe them down.
Am I wrong to assume that a pet-safe salt would be not as an effective salt at breaking up snow and ice?
No, not at all.
It's just as effective?
Just as effective, yeah.
It's just a different chemical composition?
Yeah, right? I wish I had brought it with me. It's like one is calcium something, the other is calcium something else.
Interesting.
But yeah, no, it works just as well.
I mean, I probably should know about this. I'm just not aware. Do you get it at, I mean, we got our salt at Wegmans. Where do you get it?
I got mine at Wegmans and Home Depot. Sells them as well.
And they both sell?
Absolutely.
Just ask for pet safe salt.
Yeah, it'll say right on the bag. It'll say right on safe for pets.
Now, I think in March, we're going to be focusing on Unleashed about rescues. And there's a lot of great people in our community who will help with rescuing, fostering animals that need it. And I don't want to give away too much of the story, but we're going to be telling you the story of a dog named Vortex. Vortex is a pit bull named Vortex because his owner just decided didn't want him anymore and let him outside in Rochester during the polar vortex, which is obviously a bad enough time for an animal to be outside. I think it was in the single digits and then in the negatives and in that kind of wind chill. And Vortex was outside, I think the vet thinks, for a while because there was injury to the paws, especially the pads, I guess.
Sounds like frostbite.
So, yeah. All right. So when it comes to the kind of injuries to pads, you talked about the way salt can lead to cracking and those things, very painful. What about just cold in general?
Oh, absolutely. You know, unless you've adopted, you know, a sled dog that ran the Iditarod, it's cold outside. Pets are cold. I mean, they're, you know, pets, they sleep on our couches, they sleep in our beds, you know, they're indoor animals. They go outside to do their stuff and exercise, but they get cold. And it's a total misconception that they're used to being outside. It's just not true at all. They get cold just like we do. Bigger dogs, you know, with a little more fur, don't get cold quite as quickly, but all animals get cold and they should be, you know, you should limit the time outside, especially when the temperature is below 30 degrees.
If you took in an animal like this dog Vortex, whose story we're going to learn more about in a couple of months, you know, I say took in, or if someone came to you with an animal like that, having said, you know, this dog was outside for 24 hours or something like that in that extreme cold, what would you expect to see? What kind of exam would you be giving it?
Well, I mean, we do a thorough physical exam, check for frostbite, you know, hard pads, cracked pads, you know, non-responsive, you know, pinching of the toes, things like that. And then, of course, you know, you do a body temperature, you check heart rate. Depending on other signs, we, you know, might run some blood work, make sure the kidneys haven't become infected, things along those lines. But basically, we just do a good physical exam and see if there's any, you know, problems with any of the systems that we check out.
Do you see frostbite with any regularity?
We do not, fortunately.
Yeah, that's good.
We don't.
And if you do, what's the treatment for it?
Well, again, you know, it's like with people, it's a slow warming. You don't want to just dip them in hot water. That's the worst thing you can do. Basically, it's just, you know, allowing the body temperature to come up. Unfortunately, in some instances, you will have to amputate toes and things like that if it's, you know, too far gone.
I don't think I understand the mindset of people who would say, this is not an animal I want anymore. I'm just going to leave it outside.
Well, I mean, that's a whole nother discussion for another day, I guess. I mean, that's terrible.
Do you have any clients who just ask you, what should I do? I'm trying to get rid of an animal here.
There have been instances where people are moving and they can't take their pets with them.
Right,
so they try to, you know, they put an ad in the paper. They try to, you know, find neighbors or somewhere, or friends will take them. And Lollipop, you know, Maine Society, will always take those pets. And that's, you know, usually the last ditch for the people that I know. I haven't had anybody who says, well, I'm just going to throw it outside and we'll be done with it. Lollipop will always take those pets if they can't find a home for them.
And we are going to hear from Lollipop later this hour, in fact, about the dynamic of, you know, what do you do and bringing an animal into your home, kind of introducing an animal to a home with other pets, other animals, et cetera. So the doctor's right. There's a lot of different sort of related subjects, and we will talk about rescues and all of those things as related to it. But I just hope in this kind of weather you're not just leaving your animals outside. I've seen some people have put some funny vines on Twitter. I've seen dogs wearing booties for the first time. They don't like it.
Great.
But they should.
You know, little
dogs. You say great that they're wearing booties.
If it's little dogs and their feet get cold, there's no problem with that. You know, sweaters, I think are great.
They'll get used to it, is what you're
they
saying.
They will. Well, some of them. Most of them will. Most of them will.
Because this is a video. These videos are cute because sure. The dogs don't like it. But most of the time, I guess it's just, you know, if someone says, doctor, the dog is not digging the boots, just
take them off.
Take them or keep forcing them in it, right?
Well, that or just don't have them outside for so long. I mean, you know, that's, you know, the main thing is just don't have your pets outside in cold weather for too long. And as an aside, we always think about in the summertime leaving your pets in the car, you know, when you go in shopping or something and the temperature goes up and up and up. Same thing in the winter. Do not leave your pet in the car when you go into Wegmans or something and do your shopping. It's an ice box in that car. That car gets cold. I mean, it gets really cold. So, you know, you're not doing your pet any favor by leaving it in the car while you go into Wegmans. Oh, you know, it's out of the wind. It'll be fine. No, it won't be fine. It gets very cold in cars. Very cold.
This time of year, most of this week has been in the 20s. We should see some 20s and maybe a little bit of 30s this weekend. If you're out for a walk with your animal, how long can you expect to walk, not need gloves when it's in the 20s?
Right. I mean, again, it's different for all pets, but you know, you're talking 10, 15, 20 minutes at the most. You really are. No more than that. No more than that. You're asking for trouble.
Even animals that love to be outside.
Yeah, you know, if you're throwing, you know, sticks in the snow or something, the dog's goofing around, it's out there with the kids or something, you know, a little more maybe, but, you know, be careful. You know, you got to remember you're out there, your kids are out there with boots and gloves and scarves and stuff. The dog isn't. So.
All right. So we're going to get to your questions and phone calls later in the hour with Dr. Mark Pessin. And now's a good time for you if you want to weigh in with a question. And I'll be getting to some of those again coming up here. You can call the program as well. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Jeremy writes to us, I take my dog Lucky to Fairview. She's seen Dr. Pessin a couple of times. Good people there.
Nice to hear. Thank you.
I was going to ask you if you can immediately recognize my name, but you've got a lot of clients. You probably have several Luckies, I imagine.
We have a number of Luckies.
Is Lucky a popular name?
Very popular. And some not so Luckies, but no, a lot of Luckies. That's a good name.
Most popular dog name off the top of your head. I'm going to guess Max.
Max is a good one. And believe it or not, we got a lot of Bowsers for some reason.
That's a real name? Like, people still do it?
I saw one today.
You saw a Bowser
today? I saw a Bowser this morning, yep.
Most popular cat name?
Fluff. Sorry, but that is the most popular cat name.
All right, well, I see the phone ringing. We're going to get to your calls here in just a second. Let's get a short break-in, actually. Poor John Andrus has got to do everything back there. So as soon as John gets this call in, we'll get a break in. And I'll let you know as well here, if you're just joining us, Unleash the Pet Show is usually the third Friday of every month, the first hour. It's our chance to hear from various members of the veterinary community and for you to get your questions in as well. And we've had a lot of questions from people who say, well, here's a story about animals I'd like you to tell. We're going to be talking to the folks from Farm Sanctuary and some of these other organizations that seek to help animals in various ways. So we certainly will take your suggestions if you want to share them with me or our producer, Megan Mack, as well. But let's get our first break in here. And then when we come back here, we'll get to your phone calls and more with Dr. Mark Pessin from Fairview Veterinary Hospital. So, John, we get to a break here. Let's go ahead and John's still typing. Let's get to our first break and we'll come right back here with your phone calls next.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from All Cats Care Center, a full-service feline veterinary hospital offering medical and surgical care and boarding. All Cats Care Center, where cats come first. More online at allcatscarecenter.com. From the financial advisors of the Sartini Group at Morgan Stanley, 585-987-6053. Investments and services are offered through Morgan Stanley Smith Barney, LLC, member SIPC. And Natural Pet Foods Company, helping people make diet choices for their pets, offering frozen and grain-free foods and foods for pets with special needs. 766 Clinton Avenue in the South Wedge. NaturalPetFoodsCompany.com.
Welcome back to Connections and Unleash the Pet Show right here on Connections. I want to grab our first phone call, and this is Mary in Avon, who's on with Dr. Mark Pessin from Fairview Veterinary Hospital. Go ahead, Mary.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have two cats about a year and a half old. One is always indoors. The other goes out and comes in. She seems, the outdoor one, seems much hungrier these days. How much more should I be feeding her? Does she need more calories now that she's going outside more in cold weather?
Okay, great question. You know, we can depend on, you know, we can determine how much to eat, you know, by you know, body weight and body condition score. Mm-hmm. So, you know, your veterinarian should, you know, be looking at the cat and coming up with the condition score. You know, a little thin, we'd feed more. A little heavy, you would, you know, feed a little less. Cats that are outside usually have a little more of a nutritional requirement. But that, again, would be a lot more dependent on body score. The other thing that you need to make sure is get the stool sample checked. Outdoor cats can, you know, get parasites a lot easier than indoor cats, especially things like tapeworms if your cat is a hunter or something along those lines. And a lot of times, even with tapeworms, it won't show up in the stool sample. So you should be sure, you know, you should be making sure your outdoor cat is getting prophylactically treated for parasites. And probably a good idea for the indoor cat, too, because the outdoor cat can bring things inside as well. And then also, you know, flea and tick protection, especially for that outdoor cat.
Okay. Makes sense. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary. Thanks for the phone call. In Leroy, this is Bonnie. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Hi. Yes. My dog is 10 years old, and he's arthritic, but he keeps re-injuring a foreleg that's offset to the worst of his back legs. And then he starts licking, not the pad, but just up from the pad. What can I do to keep him from licking it? I try to keep him away from it, and I spray it with this stuff, but he keeps licking it.
Right.
Leave him alone.
Yeah. Well, you can do that. I guess you need to, you know, you need to determine what is the cause of the licking. You know, does he have a sore joint there? You know, is it the arthritis that's making him painful, which is causing the licking, or is it a skin condition?
No, I think it's a sore joint.
All right. So, you know, you need to, you know, and again, it depends on how aggressive you want to be. But, you know, you can take x-rays, you know, find out what level of arthritis you're dealing with, or, you know, God forbid, is there something more serious? And then there's a number of products. I mean, you could start right off by using a chondroitin glucosamine product. You know, humans, you know, take it all the time, things like shark cartilage.
He already takes that.
Now, is he on any kind of, is he on pain medication as well?
No.
See, now that may be something to discuss with your veterinarian. There's excellent pain medications, you know, for dogs. You know, don't go running out and giving them Tylenol.
Right.
But there are pain medications that you can give your dog depending on, you know, what your veterinarian determines is the cause of the pain and what would go better. But if it's a joint problem, things like that, spraying it, you know, using bitter apple, things like that, it's not going to help. It's the pain is underneath. So, you know, right. You need to, you know, determine the cause of the pain, how serious, you know, what kind of arthritis are we dealing with, or God forbid, something even more serious. And then your veterinarian can get you on an appropriate pain medication. And there's a number of good choices out there right now.
Okay. He did give me what he called the dog's version of an aspirin, and 4 days in a row he had that, and 4 days in a row he spit up. So
there
afterwards
it was
distressing his stomach.
Stomach,
I was
right.
Hoping there was something I could rub on it. He has got long hair, but, you know.
Yeah,
massaging it or something, or just I try to keep him off from it, and
right.
Then it goes away.
Then it goes right. And again, there are other pain medications. You know, you're probably talking about the non-steroidals that you tried, and upset his stomach, but there are other pain medications. Things like, you know, there is a doggy form of Lyrica. There's also a medication called Tramadol. But you know, these are the kind of things your veterinarian has to discuss with
mm-hmm.
you.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, there's not a whole lot of things that you can rub on it that are really going to make a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing you may want to consider would be something like physical therapy.
Right. Well, he's taking swim.
All right, good. That's great.
Well, Bonnie, I hope that helps. Thanks for the phone call there. If you want to call with a question for Dr. Mark Pessin, it's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255. And I don't know what chondroitin is, other than the fact that it only shows up in a sentence with glucosamine. What does it do?
It is a, without getting too specific,
yeah.
It is a cartilage protector. It's not a pain medication. The theory behind it's supposed to slow down the natural process of cartilage destruction and, you know, and joint issues. So a lot of times when, you know, you take chondroitin glucosamine, you're not going to see, you know, the old dog's not always going to, you know, jump up and start dancing the jig or anything like that. But, you know, you're slowing down some of the natural processes that are going to occur in that joint. So it's more of a long-term answer.
Do people make the mistake of hoping that it is a pain reliever?
Yes, because there's commercials on TV for things like Cosequin and Adequin, and, you know, the dog all of a sudden is jumping off the dock and, you know, swimming a marathon. And if it helps with that, fantastic. You know, some dogs will definitely can have a benefit. that way. But most of the time, it's going to be a lot more subtle.
Email from a listener named Emily just said, Evan, thanks for doing the show. And please, if you could, stress that many animals don't show pain or discomfort until it can be extreme for them.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
Absolutely correct. Dogs and cats, in their genealogy, they're outside, they're prey. And, if they show weakness, if they show, that they're hurt, then, they're more apt to be attacked when, they used to live into the wild. So animals are very good at hiding things.
I always thought cats hide more than dogs. Is that right?
Both.
They both do.
They both do.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So don't just assume that if they're really cold or if they're really in discomfort, if they're really hurting, that I'll find out, they'll let me know in some way.
That is correct. But yeah. But there will be subtle signs, especially when they're cold. They'll be moving more slowly and, those type of things. Pet owners are pretty, I found out over the years, they really are in tune with their pets. They know what's going on.
In studio, we've got Dr. Mark Pessin from Fairview Veterinary Hospital for this edition of Unleashed. And you can call the program with a question at 844-295-TALK, toll-free 844-295-8255. Or if you're right here in Rochester, it's 263-WXXI, 263-9994. You can tweet your question to the hashtag Unleashed. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/UnleashedPetShow. Now, perhaps you've chosen an alternative treatment for yourself at some point, such as acupuncture, when you've been ill or had an injury, or in my case, a migraine sometimes. And some veterinarians now offer non-traditional treatments for animals, too. Our own Beth Adams visited Mendon Integrative Veterinary Medicine recently to learn more about this.
Hello, how are you?
Hi, Linda.
Hi, Dory. Just my kooky girl.
Hey, Dory. You excited, Dory?
I met Dory, a 6-year-old chocolate lab, as she was about to undergo a laser therapy session. Dory was wearing a pair of goggles to protect her eyes from the laser. Her mom, Linda Hotra, held her head as the dog lied down on a floor mat, and veterinarian Andrea Williamson got ready to apply a handheld laser to Dory's hip area.
Dory had a classic injury, especially for our Labrador Retriever breeds. She had a tear of her ACL, and she has been coming to physical rehab. This is her 8th session, so she's coming once a week for 8 weeks, and she is 11 weeks post-surgery. So today technically is her graduation day.
I was a little surprised to see Dory, who I was told was a pretty active dog, become so relaxed during the treatment. That may be because before I arrived, Dory had physical therapy, some stretching and a massage. Linda said her dog seems to enjoy it.
Dory has had a very limited social life during her recuperation. So this has been her main activity, coming here once a week. And typically she comes in and she's absolutely cuckoo crazy for, I don't know, probably the first 10 minutes at least. Mm-hmm. She has to just work out some of this lab energy that she hasn't been able to use.
Dr. Williamson explained that following Dory's surgery for her ACL injury, the laser therapy is being used to increase muscle mass and control her pain.
The laser essentially takes light energy and stimulates the cells at a microscopic level. And the cells are stimulated to release energy, to release endorphins or pain transmitters or anti-pain transmitters. It can also stimulate anti-inflammatory effects.
She says drugs could be prescribed to control those symptoms, but she sees advantages to this alternative treatment.
It's drug-free. It's pain-free. There's no physical sensation that pets will feel with this particular laser.
The use of lasers in veterinary medicine isn't new. At the University of Florida, veterinarians say they're using the treatment successfully for dogs who have undergone surgery for spinal injuries. Andre Williamson believes this type of alternative treatment complements rather than competes with traditional veterinary medicine.
The Western side of the world, we can run tests, and if we get an answer, great, we can treat those problems specifically. But when we don't have a specific answer, then we're left with the question of what do we do next?
And that was the question Dave Allerton was asking himself when his 11-year-old dog Anna stopped eating. Anna was weak and had arthritis in her legs and hips, and she was already getting laser treatments for that. She had a lot of traditional tests, but no definitive diagnosis that would explain her loss of appetite.
Dr. Williamson said, can I just try a round of acupuncture on her? So I said, sure. She did the acupuncture. I took her home, and she started eating again. And she ate right up until the day we had to put her down.
How long of a period was that from that treatment until her death?
About 6 months. So I'm totally 100% know that the treatment that she got, especially the acupuncture, I think made a great impact that, you know, in the care that she got, extended her life, and a good one at that.
Although some studies looking at the efficacy of acupuncture in animals show positive results, two reviews concluded that there is not enough evidence across all animal species to either support or discourage the practice. But Dr. Williamson said she has found success recently treating a 15-year-old cat who has arthritis in his elbows. The cat also has kidney disease, so she says acupuncture is a helpful alternative to drugs, which he wouldn't be able to tolerate.
We're always struggling as veterinarians to find ways to offer pain control for cats. So the laser therapy, again, it's a great way to decrease pain and inflammation at the level of the joint if a cat is suffering from arthritis. They tolerate the laser therapy with the exception of having to wear the goggles, which dogs and cats alike don't necessarily love, but they tolerate it more than most would think. Cats tolerate laser therapy very well. Acupuncture therapy, you do have to choose specific points. So most cats don't want you to stick needles in their paws. There are some that I can, and they're great cats.
Overall, Williamson recommends alternative treatments like laser and acupuncture, and in some cases, herbal remedies for animals that have arthritis, mobility issues, injuries, and chronic disease. And she has seen about 30 patients at her Mendon clinic since she opened last October.
Our thanks to our Beth Adams for that contribution to Unleash the Pet Show. And Dr. Peston, I remember having a migraine one time so severe that I said, I don't know about acupuncture, but I will try anything. And because there's no atheist in a foxhole. So there I went out there, got some acupuncture, and I felt like I could jump out of the gym an hour later. I don't know if it was placebo or not. Maybe it was. Maybe it wasn't. With an animal, placebo is probably not in play, right?
Correct.
I don't think so.
With the owner, maybe.
Yes, right. There may be some confirmation bias. But you have to figure out if something's working. And the harder part with an animal is you can't ask them right away, do you feel better? Now, you can watch their behavior, and that's probably the indicator, right?
Correct.
Yeah, so
correct.
Does that make it difficult for you at times, though, to know if a treatment is working?
Sure. Yeah, it can. You know, you know, we learn to, you know, what signs to watch for and, you know, what questions to ask the owner. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a lot easier to ask someone how they're feeling.
Well, let me grab another phone call here, and this is in Canandaigua. This is Maureen on with Dr. Mark Peston. Go ahead, Maureen.
Hi, Dr. Peston. I'm a long time client at Fairview, and you guys are the greatest folks ever. I trust you implicitly, and it's such a great feeling.
Well, that's nice to hear.
I misspoke earlier. I had said I had a 7-year-old Yorkie. Actually, he's 9, and he's currently taking the GlycoFlex 2 level and gobbles them right up, no problem. At what point is it an age-related issue to when they switch to that next level? It's
an age-related issue, but also the degree of arthritis, you know, the degree of discomfort that we're dealing with. There's no hard and fast rules to when to switch, you know, from 1 to 2 or 2 to 3. But, you know, that is something that, you know, you and I together, you know, we'll talk about or whoever your veterinarian that you see, you know, we'll talk about, you know, there's a little history there and then an exam. And then, you know, we make that determination as a team when to, okay, you know, make that switch over.
Okay, because he's an interesting dog. He's very laid back for Yorkie. So,
wow, that's interesting.
Other callers say he's, you know, doesn't seem to be as active. They slow down when it's colder. He's just kind of a grumpy, slow dog. That's just his personality. So that's what I was just wondering if I, you know, if we should bump him up. But he's due soon for his exam, so we'll certainly discuss that then.
Sure. And you know, there's always, you know, we can run blood work. Sometimes there's, you know, hormonal diseases that can cause this. But it sounds like your dog's always been a little older and grumpy, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Right. Nothing wrong with that at all.
Not at all.
Hey, well, thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thanks, Maureen. On with Dr. Mark Peston from Fairview Veterinary Hospital. David on Twitter writes and says, Rimadyl has done wonders for our soon-to-be 16-year-old Wheaton Terrier, and it's been fantastic. Tell me again, what is that?
It's called Rimadyl. It's a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory. It's in the same classifications as things like Tylenol and Aleve, even though you should never give your pets Tylenol or Aleve, but it's the same class of drug. It's a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory. It's a pain medication, and it's been around forever. It's very safe, given at the correct dosing. We use a lot of Rimadyl for, you know, arthritis, older pets, and then also pets that, you know, just may have gone outside and fell down and hurt their leg and, you know, a little sore for a few days.
So it's safe and can be very effective.
Very effective, safe given at the correct dosing, yes.
All right, very good. If you want to call the program and join the callers with their questions for Dr. Pessin, you can do that. It's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. I'm going to sneak in one more quick question before our next break here, and I'll take one from Max, a human. Not Max and Dog. There are humans named Max.
A few left.
Max just wants to know about dental cleaning. He says his vet is recommending it every year, and he's wondering if it's worth spending the money. Now, this is a question that has come up on this program in the past, and I suspect it will come up just about every month, just because anybody with a pet will eventually run into, boy, that feels like it's a lot of money, but is it important and necessary?
It is absolutely important and necessary. You know, again, some people are heavy tartar, you know, will develop tartar and plaque and calculus a lot quicker than other animals and other people will. Once a year is a very good rule of thumb. More importantly, their dogs and cats are not good rinse and spitters, so you have to sedate them to do the cleaning. We take full mouth x-rays, so we can take a look at the roots and we can see, you know, issues that may not be so observant, you know, just from orally, you know, just from grossly looking at the mouth. But once a year is a good rule of thumb, and I understand the question. It is very expensive. If you can brush your dog's teeth at home, there are mouthwashes. You know, the more that you do at home, the less that we're going to have to do at the office. But once a year is a pretty good rule of thumb to get your animal's, you know, teeth cleaned. Absolutely.
And I would assume that you, like many vets we've talked to, will have clients who, you know, you've got an animal that's 7, 8, 9, 10, never had a cleaning, and they start to wonder, you know, what's it going to cost and how would I know if the animal's in discomfort? Well, this is another case where, particularly a cat's probably not going to tell you if it hurts to eat, right?
Correct. And interestingly, there are many times where, you know, someone comes in, they bring their pet in for a teeth cleaning, and then after they go home, there are times we'll get a call a few days later, I never knew my pet was in discomfort. You know, I got the cat home and dog home, and a few days after the cleaning, the dog's eating better than it's ever eaten before. So we do see those situations where the owners don't really realize what's going on until after the cleaning, after the procedure, and they see that the pet is actually doing much better. Now, sometimes there's obvious, you know, you see blood in the water bowl,
sure.
Or, you know, the animal's only eating out of one side of the mouth, or the food's dropping out of the mouth. I mean, there are obvious, you know, things, but a lot of times it's very subtle, and sometimes you don't realize it until after the procedure is done, and you realize, wow, my pet's eating better than it ever has.
Have you seen animals lose weight because they were in discomfort when it comes to eating?
Yes. I mean, that's pretty dramatic. Usually, you know, people bring their animals in before we get to that point.
Yeah.
But yes, I mean, that has happened. Most owners don't wait that long.
Okay. Dogs, cats, is there a range in what you're going to pay to have teeth cleaned?
I don't want to get into the financials because it's really different. But, you know, a good, thorough teeth cleaning x-rays with no extractions will be obviously less than if we have to get into that mouth and have to extract a number of teeth. Sometimes there are add-on costs. If the animal is, you know, 7, 8, 9 or older, we're going to have to run blood work prior to the procedure. That adds a little bit to the cost. It's hard to get into actual numbers because, you know, I don't have the pet in front of me and I can't look at it. But at least at our clinic, and I'm sure it's the same everywhere else, the owner will get an estimate before the procedure is done. So they'll know where they are as far as what it's going to cost.
And I will simply say that, you know, with a couple of cats, when we finally paid for a cleaning, you know, we were like a lot of pet owners. We don't want to make them, we want them to have a high quality of life, but we also want to make sure we're not getting scammed. I don't know. When we saw the before and after pictures, I had felt guilty that we had waited.
Yeah, they're pretty dramatic.
Do you show?
Yeah, yeah, we have before and after pictures.
I mean, absolutely. They can be stunning. And my guess is you have customers who are stunned.
Right, right. And again, like I said before, and that's only part of the issue, you know, what you're not seeing is what's going on underneath the gum line, root problems, things like that. But yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, most of the ones that we see are just, you know, good, thorough, clean brush polish with the x-rays. And it's amazing how much better the pets will feel after that.
All right, we're going to try to fit in a few more of your questions for the end of the hour. Let's get a short break, and we're going to come back with a conversation about how to introduce a pet to a home in different scenarios. Lollipop Farm helps with that. Sometimes you have an older cat. Older cats are really cool about new animals coming into the house, aren't they?
They're really understanding. Yeah, 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 they're very welcoming.
Yeah, you just have a nice conversation. Listen, you know, you've had this house for 12 years, but now you got to share it. You know,
yeah.
They're totally understanding. Let's get a short break, and we'll talk about introducing pets to the home next on Unleashed. Coming up in our second hour, the Democrat and Chronicle is hosting the new Unite Rochester Challenge. They wanted ideas. What can we do that would make our community stronger? What can we do to improve equality and an even chance for everyone in our community? They got 89 ideas, and you're going to hear from some of the authors on what we all could do. That's next hour on Connections.
This is WXXI AM Rochester, WRUR FM and HD Rochester, WEOS FM and HD Geneva, and WXXI FM HD2 Rochester.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, my guest for the hour, and I see the phone ringing again. It's Dr. Mark Pessin of Fairview Veterinary Hospital, and we're going to get to your phone calls and questions right before the end of the hour. But what we want to do is tell you a little bit more about what we were talking about in just a moment ago, which is introducing new animals to the home. And you know, that's going to be a question at some point for just about anybody. So let me bring in producer Megan Mack, who spoke with Rebecca Lonis, an annual animal behavior and training expert at Lollipop Farm. Their conversation focuses on all of this and more. And of course, as Mark said earlier, Lollipop Farm is always there for you when you need, you know, if you've got an animal, unfortunately, that you can't take care of anymore, or if you need some, you know, if you're looking for a new animal to introduce to the home. So let's go ahead and listen, if we could. John, cut number two. This is Megan Mack talking to Lollipop Farm's Rebecca Lonis.
When families are thinking about introducing a new cat or dog to their home, what are some basic guidelines that they should consider?
Well, the first thing to consider is to really make a good match with the new animal that you're bringing home. So in general, we try to match energy levels. So if you have a really young, energetic cat, they're probably going to do best with another energetic cat. If you have an older cat who's lower energy, a little bit lazier, probably not going to appreciate being pounced on by a young kitten.
Do dogs and cats react differently to a new pet being brought into the home?
They do. So cats in general require a little bit more of a gradual introduction. So we often recommend confining a new cat to your home for about, giving them their own room for about a week before letting them out in the bigger part of the house. And with dogs, you can often integrate them even in just one day, but you're still going to need to supervise any new pet that you have for at least a few weeks with your new animals. You wouldn't want to let them be unsupervised before that.
That leads me to a question that my colleague Veronica Volk had. She said, is it true that you have to lock a kitten in a bathroom for the first week in your home?
It's recommended for sure, and they'll have an easier transition if you do confine them to their own room, because then they can get comfortable in that room, and then you can gradually introduce them to the rest of the house. It really depends on the temperament of the kitten. If you have a really bold, confident kitten, you're probably not going to need a whole week in that single room. But if you have a shy cat or kitten, they're really going to appreciate a gradual introduction.
So walk us through how to make those initial introductions for both dogs and cats.
Okay. So for cats, the best place to start is actually swapping scents. So without them even seeing each other, you can rub a towel on one cat and then place it in the environment of the other cat and vice versa. So they can even just get used to the smell of the other cat. For dogs, what you can do is really take them for a walk first before you even let them meet face to face. So just, again, the key is gradual introductions for cats and dogs, not just throwing them together and letting them work it out. You never want to let them just work it out. It could result in injuries. So for dogs, a nice walk together and then maybe some playtime in a fenced-in area if that's available. You always want to think about going from the most amount of space to the least amount of space. So walk first, then fenced-in area, then some time together in the house, but always supervised and intervening if things get too excited or if you see any aggression from either animal.
If you adopt a dog or a cat from Lollipop Farm, can you bring the pets that you currently have at home into the shelter to meet the new pet?
Yeah, we strongly recommend that for dogs, but not for cats. Since you want to do the introduction so gradually with cats, we tend to not to want to overwhelm them in the shelter, and it's best to do that over a series of a couple of, at least a few days, but probably more like a couple of weeks for a new cat coming into your house.
What should you keep an eye on within the first few weeks of having the new animals at home?
So you want to make sure that you're not seeing any aggressive interactions, no conflicts. For cats, a little bit of hissing when they first see the other cat is normal, but you shouldn't see contact. If you see that they're fighting or wrestling, go back a few steps, so restrict the freedom of the new cat a little bit. Maybe try some introductions through a baby gate so you can quickly close the door if you need to. And then introduce really good food for each animal when they're seeing each other for the first few times. So you really want to teach them to have a positive association with the new animal, and you can do that by associating the new animal with their favorite food. And usually for dogs and cats, that's meat. So maybe cook a steak and
a little incentive.
Exactly.
And what about food? Should you feed new pets separately from your current pets? Should they have different food? How do you separate?
So for cats, you can actually use feeding time to help desensitize them to each other. And you can start by feeding them within their, so after maybe the first week, you can feed them within the sight line of the other cat, but pretty far apart, and then gradually bring their food dishes closer and closer together so that they're eating, they're seeing the other cat, and it sort of helps them to learn, oh, okay, the other cat means that good things are happening, I'm eating my food. And for dogs, I always recommend feeding them separately because it's a potential source of conflict for a lot of dogs, and you might as well just eliminate it right off the bat. Rather than seeing if they can share food, there's no reason to tempt fate, in my opinion. So just feed separately for dogs.
If you have a dog or a cat who's older, and it's been the only pet in the home for years upon years, and you're thinking about bringing in a puppy or a kitten, does that older dog or cat feel a little jealous? Is there a territory issue? How do you handle those types of situations?
Yeah, often when we introduce a new cat and they don't get along, it is a territorial issue. And it can really help to create more territory in your house by adding vertical spaces and adding hiding places for cats so that they have room to get away from each other if they want to get away from each other. For dogs, there can be some territorial issues, but it's less common. They're a little bit more well socialized with other animals, so they're usually a little bit more used to new animals coming into their area or meeting new animals outside of their home. If your dog isn't really well socialized to other dogs, then it might be that you need to take a little bit longer time introducing your new dog to your current dog. And like I said before, you always want to be sure not to let them work it out themselves. So if you see that the older dog seems overwhelmed or is hiding or is growling or showing their teeth to the new puppy, you want to intervene and give the older dog some space and some individual attention. So you don't want to just lavish all your attention on the new puppy. You want to make sure that your older dog is getting attention as well. And that's where really good food can also come in handy.
What happens if they just don't get along? You just can't find a way to relieve that tension.
Definitely consult a behavior professional. So at Lollipop Farm, we offer in-home consultations. So you can call up and talk to myself or one of the other trainers there. And I work with cat introduction issues and dog introduction issues. It sometimes is a more complicated process that you're going to need more coaching on to make sure everyone gets along harmoniously. So if you really have the idea of matching your new animal with your current animal's personality, then you're going to do much better than if you just fall in love with the new animal and say, I'm going to shoehorn this animal into my house no matter what. So if you sort of let your current animal dictate your choices on your new animal, then that's really going to help you transition the two of them to getting along together. And that goes for a cat-cat pair, a dog-dog pair, or even a dog-cat pair. So if you have a cat and you're adding a dog, if you can adopt a dog who has a history of living with cats and getting along well with them, you're much better poised to have a harmonious household than if you adopt a dog who has a history of chasing cats.
Rebecca, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And our thanks to producer Megan Mack for that interview with Lollipop Farms' Rebecca Lonis. A few minutes left in this edition of Unleash the Pet Show and some calls lined up, so let's get through as many of those as we can. William, next up, and you are on the line with Dr. Mark Pessin from Fairview Veterinary Hospital. Go ahead, William.
Hi. My wife and I recently got a male rabbit who's about a year old, and he is, for the most part, litter trained, but if we leave him in the upstairs hallway where we keep his cage, he seems to restrict his peeing to the litter box. But if we open doors, he's found a number of places he likes to pee. And I just want to confirm, it's my understanding that at least neutering would help greatly with that. Is that correct?
That.
So what should we be looking for in a vet who does neuter rabbits? Because I've called around and actually it's much rarer than I would have thought.
Right, right. No, that is correct. Neutering will help. And there is a clinic called Cats and Critters that do take care of rabbits. So that's maybe some place that you would need to investigate. But they do take care of rabbits, and you're right. It is it's sort of a niche animal at this point, and you don't want a veterinarian who says, "Oh yeah, I see a few rabbits." I mean, you want somebody who knows what they're doing. I would recommend Cats and Critters.
Okay, and then someone also suggested it's a bit of a drive, but Cornell Veterinary Hospital.
Well, sure. But that is a bit of a drive, especially, you know, if it's an emergency and you needed to get someplace pretty quickly. But yeah, I mean, you can never go wrong at Cornell. I mean, you've got the whole, you know, veterinary hospital behind you there. That would be a perfectly acceptable alternative if you want to make the drive.
All right, Dan in Brighton, next up. Go ahead, Dan.
Hi, this is sort of a crazy question, but I'll explain it. Can deer get bovine tuberculosis?
Can deer get bovine tuberculosis?
You are outside of my knowledge base with that one. I am a small animal veterinarian. Sorry.
No problem.
Dan, you're right. That was not what we expected. But you know what? It's Unleashed the Pet Show, and deer not usually pets probably shouldn't be.
They definitely shouldn't be.
But Dan, I do apologize for that, not having an answer for you there, Dan. And maybe
he can actually call the Cornell, you know, cooperative service. They definitely be able to answer that question. That's just outside of my knowledge base.
All right, let's get back inside your knowledge base. Kate sends an email to us and asks the following. She says, "I'm going to pick up a new puppy tomorrow from a breeder, a blue heeler. I've been doing some reading up on puppies, as it's been more than 12 years since I've had a puppy. In the reading, there's a lot of warnings about the parvo virus." And she says, "As I understand it, my puppy will not be fully immunized until 16 to 18 weeks from this deadly virus. Many of these sources have me concerned that I have to keep the puppy inside for 8 weeks. I live in the city of Canandaigua. I spend a lot of time outside in the neighborhood and in area parks. How can I protect the new puppy from the parvo virus over the next 8 weeks and not quarantine ourselves to the indoors?"
Again, depends on the vaccination history that you'll get from the breeder. It is a good idea to keep the animal inside as much as possible. If you are going to take it outside, try not to have it come in contact with other animals because you don't know what their vaccination status is as well. You can definitely take it outside for walks and things like that, but try to keep it away from other animals. And again, a lot of it depends on what the vaccination status of that puppy will be already from the breeder and then what you will set up with your own veterinarian.
But don't necessarily need a quarantine.
You do not need a quarantine. Okay. No, not at all.
And what is parvo?
Parvo is an intestinal virus that puppies can get. It was a lot more serious 10, 15, 20 years ago. We used to see a lot of parvo. Not so much anymore. Owners are being much more on top of vaccinating. Breeders are being better at vaccinating. It's not something that we see a lot anymore, which is great. It's a deadly disease. Can be a deadly disease.
All right, about a minute left then. When it comes to vaccinations for your animals, what's sort of the schedule that we should have?
Well, again, you know, it depends on what age the pet is. But usually, you know, if you get a puppy, a young puppy, usually the first shots are given at 6 weeks, and then you go 8, 12, and 16 weeks. Then they should come back in at 6 months for the six-month exam, and then it's yearly vaccinations after that.
For parvo, anything else?
I have distemper. Okay. There's other, you know, leptospirosis. I mean, we need to get into all that. But, there, you know, your veterinarian will know
we'll
have the schedule. We'll know what to give the vaccines for and at what times.
Okay. If you get an adult dog that's never been vaccinated, should you get it vaccinated?
Oh, God, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Actually, it's state law for rabies to begin with, and you want to protect it against all the other diseases too. There's a disease out there called leptospirosis, which people can get. So you need to be very careful.
Where is Fairview Veterinary Hospital?
We are in We are south of the village of Fairport. We are at the intersection of 250 and 31.
Know exactly what that is. 250 and 31 for Fairview Veterinary Hospital. Are you online, Dr. Pessin?
Yes, we are. We have a Facebook page, and you can catch us there.
All right, Fairview Veterinary Hospital there, and Dr. Mark Pessin, great answers for our many listeners who had questions this hour. It's been great having you, and thank you so much for taking the time for us.
Well, thanks for asking me over.
And this is Unleash the Pet Show. It's usually the third Friday of every month, so we'll be back here in February talking cats next month. Starting the war between cat and dog owners. You know, some of us love them both. You can love them both. Short break, and a fresh hour of connections is straight ahead.